and welcome to the official podcast for The Times Presents Destinations, the holiday and travel show 2011. This is the essential event for travel inspiration, offering a wealth of exclusive deals whilst explorers and writers inspire and amuse with unforgettable tales of adventure. We're previewing this year's shows at London's Earls Court between the 3rd and 6th of February and Birmingham's NEC from the 4th to the 6th of March by chatting to some of the people you can expect to hear from in this year's Meet the Experts Theatre. Hi, I'm Wayne Scott, and in this episode of the Destination Show podcast, I'm talking to Alistair Humphreys. He's a British adventurer, author, and blogger who spent 4 years cycling around the world, a journey of 46,000 miles through 60 countries across 5 continents. Hi, Alistair. Thanks for joining me.
Hello. Nice to talk to you.
So looking down the list of things you've done, Alistair, it's an incredible variety of experiences and challenges, all sorts of disciplines from mountaineering, cycling and rowing. It must be in your blood because you started out on your quest for adventure really young, didn't you?
I did start young, but I also think that it's not particularly in my blood, and that I still sometimes feel a bit surprised that I've somehow ended up doing this sort of stuff as a job, really, because I was not really the sporty or athletic or mountaineering type of kid. So I think I was a bit of a late developer into this sort of thing. But I feel fortunate to have ended up doing it anyway.
So you went on to spend 4 years cycling around the world. Did this idea really come about as a bet in the pub?
I think most great ideas germinate in some sort of pub at some sort of time. But no, it wasn't a bet. It was just a... And it wasn't really an epiphany either. It was a gradually brewing idea that I wanted to do something big. I wanted to do a challenge. I wanted to see some of the world, but I didn't really know what in the world I wanted to see. So it ended up just growing and growing gradually. So, unfortunately, it wasn't a pub bet or a sudden waking up one morning. It was a gradual increase in idea over about a year or two, I suppose.
So how did you go about making a really ambitious plan to basically take yourself out of everyday normal life for 4 years from what was pub talk into reality?
Well, looking back now, I can't really pinpoint this gradual growing of the idea. I remember on my wall in my room at university, I had a map of the world which had got more and more pins put into it. But I think the moment I actually committed to it was when I got offered a job that I quite liked the sound of, but I wrote to the person who'd offered me the job and said, thank you for the job, it sounds very nice, but I'm going to have to say no because I'm off to cycle around the world. And that was the moment when I thought, right, I'm going to give this a go, and I committed to it. And I think that's the two difficult things. Is one is coming up with a big-ish and bold idea, but the really hard thing is to actually begin it. And I think that really the rest was quite easy after that decision to begin and then actually making the first few pedal strokes.
Well, having just left university and being young without any ties, that must have made undertaking this a little easier.
Yeah, definitely. And it's very easy for me to say all you've got to do is think of an idea and go. But of course, there's a lot of realities that stifle that in real life. And I think the time when there are the few things that inhibit that are when you're young, and for me, just graduating, I didn't have a mortgage or a wife or many direct debits to pay and all these boring things in life, so I was as free as I was ever going to be, and I did have a sense that if I was going to do it, it had to be done right then.
How did you fund yourself for 4 years? The first question must have been, how do I pay for all this?
Yeah, money's a boring reality that gets in the way of a lot of dreams, but I said that the idea grew gradually, but I think it grew very gradually because for my whole 5 years at university, I squirreled away my student loans and I had a couple of jobs to pay for my life at uni. And so I was saving up for the 5 years. But when I graduated, I didn't really have that much. I'd saved up £7,000. But touching on what we just talked about, I felt that although £7,000 didn't really sound like enough to get around the world, I felt that if I got a proper job and saved up and appropriate amount of money, whatever that may be, then real life was likely to take over. And I felt, therefore, it was much better just to set off with not that much money and just live as cheap as I could. So I set off with £7,000, and that lasted me for 4 years.
Around the world cycling has been tried before, and it's been written about fairly extensively. What set your trip apart from previous attempts?
Well, around the world cycling's become fairly, well, I say common, relatively common in the last 2 or 3 years, and with the new craze of trying to break the speed records for doing it. But when I set off, there were a few people out and about who'd done stuff, but it wasn't such a big thing as it is now. But I think what I set out to do was to make a route that was that you couldn't really quibble with about whether it counted as round the world or not. I didn't want to cut any corners. I wanted to do it right. So I, as well as going around the world, the main aim was to try and cycle the length of 3 of the big land masses on the planet. So I went from Europe down to the south of Africa. That's one big lump of land. And then the length of the Americas from South America to North America. And then finally across Eurasia from northeastern Siberia back to England. So I tied those 3 things in, and that made it around the world as well.
Do you remember what the first day in the saddle was like?
Yeah, the first day I remember very, very well. And I remember it more than most days, because it was probably one of the worst days of my life. And I suppose I should have been setting off on this great adventure all very excited and happy and realizing how lucky I was to be going and all those positive things. But in the actual fact, all I could really think was that I'd bitten off way more than I could chew. I told all my friends I was going to cycle around the world, and I felt there was no chance I was going to get very far. I felt really out of my depth, and I just wanted to curl up and stay at home, really. So it wasn't the most heroic of starts.
Well, something quite interesting about your journey, and I know you'll be covering more on this in your Meet the Experts theatre session, which incidentally takes place at Destinations Earls Court, Friday the 4th of February at 1 p.m. Big question at the moment, did you have any issues with politics and borders? I mean, you were already on this trip when 9/11 happened, weren't you?
Yeah, it was. And the 9/11 attacks had a pretty enormous impact on my journey, in that when I set off from home, I was headed for Sydney, but once that all happened and the situation changed, I decided that cycling through Afghanistan didn't sound like such a fun idea anymore. I changed my route and I headed for Cape Town instead, so my journey completely changed route along the way. And along the way, I came up with the odd problem with governments in terms of visas and countries reciprocating England, Britain not liking them and that sort of thing. So I had a few visa issues, but I also found along the way that the countries with the reputation for being the most unpleasant often tended to have some of the kindest and most friendly and most welcoming countries, people within the countries. And I really did feel that the so-called Axis of Evil type countries that were among some of the most welcoming and kind, and that was one of the biggest revelations of my journey, really.
Yeah, what sort of reactions did you get from people along the way? An English guy riding a bike packed up with supplies isn't something you see every day in the Middle East, is it?
The reactions varied from incredulity to comedy, I suppose. I seem to spend a lot of time being the centre of attention and the entertainment for the afternoon in places. I very rarely came up against any hostility. I came up against a lot of disbelief and a lot of people who were just so surprised to see me but desperately wanted to try and help and offer their hospitality and paint a good impression of their country for me. But one of the countries that I came to enjoy the most was actually America, and that was because for just those few months in America, I no longer looked particularly different from many people. I was just a guy on a bike, I wasn't very exciting, and I was completely ignored, and it was quite nice to be anonymous for a while, because for most of those 4 years, I was really the centre of attention in every village in every day, which gets pretty exhausting after a while.
Did you ever have the sense that the world was changing whilst you're on the adventure?
Yeah, certainly. Geopolitically, it was a pretty big time that I was away, going in that my journey spanned the pre-September 11th and post-September 11th world, which was pretty huge, really. One thing that remained constant throughout that, though, was the sense that, perhaps surprisingly, being British is something that nearly everyone in the world had a positive impression of, and I think we got the Beatles and David Beckham and Princess Diana to thank for that, but almost everywhere I went, I was warmly welcomed, and the fact that perhaps Britain or whatever might be involved in some sort of political dispute with their country had very, very little impact with my journey at all, and that I was an individual meeting people who were also individuals, and politics really didn't matter too much on the journey. It was just a human-to-human experience, which sounds pretty corny, but it's also quite uplifting, really, when there's so much bad news going on in the world, to realise that 99% of people are decent, normal people, and that if you set off on a big adventure, you will be safe and welcome nearly everywhere you go.
I mean, there must have been long periods of the trip where you found yourself on your own. Was loneliness or even boredom ever a problem?
Yeah, I think both loneliness and boredom were two of the biggest obstacles of the whole experience, actually. I set off thinking it was going to be a physical challenge, whether I could ride over mountains and things, but the reality of that is that physical stuff's all pretty easy. If you just ride hard enough, you'll get over the mountain eventually. It's not really a big deal. And far greater an issue was trying to overcome the boredom of spending 4 years in my own company and the loneliness of, although I was meeting so many interesting people, the connections you made were essentially very brief and transient, and I did miss out on the deeper connections of being part of a community when you stay in one place for a long time. So, yeah, loneliness and boredom were two of the biggest hurdles, actually.
It must have been quite a challenge not seeing any of your friends and family for 4 years.
I didn't see any of my family at all for over 4 years, so that was a big sacrifice, I feel, for me, in that I missed out on seeing them for that amount of time. I hope they miss me a little bit. So I did feel homesick, and it was a difficult experience, but if it wasn't difficult, there wouldn't have been much point doing it. So the positives and the highs and the good memories hugely outweigh the difficulties involved in it.
So away for 4 years, you finally return after achieving your goal. How was life different when you returned?
One thing that struck me was that things really weren't very different. You go away for 4 years and not much changes in EastEnders in that time. My friends, not much had changed. In one way, that was really reassuring, in that I could just slip back in and feel that I was back where I was from and back where I belonged. And yet, on the other hand, it was a bit alarming that not much had happened in 4 years when so much had been happening to me. And it made me feel partly very happy to settle down for a while and partly have itchy feet. And I think that's the rod I've made for my own back that's probably going to bug me for the rest of my life, I suspect.
And the lust for adventure and excitement didn't stop there, did it? You've been involved in all sorts of different adventures since then. Tell us what you've been up to.
Since I came back, I've done a few different things, but when I settled on trying to make my life out of doing what I really loved, which was the adventures and the writing and the speaking and photography and all that side of things, I decided to go down the path of being of trying a lot of different things. There are some people who do expeditions as a career who become very, very specialised, and that's fantastic for many reasons, but I made a conscious choice that I wanted to try a real variety of different projects. So I've done a couple of ultramarathons, I did a long walk through India, I rode from England to France with an injured soldier, and then just last summer I crossed Iceland from coast to coast, but by foot and with a little boat called a pack raft. So for me, it's about the variety of experiences and variety of environments I can get to.
And now you're training for the first unsupported return journey to the South Pole. How did this come about?
Well, I've always been a bit of a sucker for Antarctic literature. There's some great books written about some of the great epic expeditions down to the South Pole. So I've always really had a soft spot for Antarctica, and the chance arose for me to get involved with an expedition to the South Pole, so I just jumped at that. The end of this year into next year is the centenary of Captain Scott's last expedition, and it seemed a very fitting match to the centenary to try and recreate his final journey, so trekking from the South Pole, so from the coast of Antarctica to the South Pole and back to the coast, but hopefully with a rather happier outcome than his team had.
Well, Alistair has a wealth of experience from such a wide variety of challenges, and he'll be telling us more at the Times Presents Destination Show in the Meet the Experts Theatre at London's Earls Court on Friday the 4th of February at 1 p.m. Alistair, thanks for talking to us.
Oh, thank you. Thanks very much.